is for World of Work podcast with James
and Jane.
Hi, this is James. I wanted to let you know that as well as these podcasts, we deliver at least one free online seminar every month that you're welcome to attend wherever you are in the world. You can learn more about them and register for them via our website, www.worldofwork.io. That's www.worldofwork.io. Hello, welcome to this episode of A World of Work podcast. We've got a really exciting conversation today and a great return conversation. We're speaking today to Joe Gray, who's a friend of ours, a friend of a show, somebody we work with quite a bit, and somebody who has recently completed their professional doctorate and is going to be speaking to us today about one of our favorite topics, which is proactivity. Joe, before we get into that and sort of delve in and unpick it and explore what it is, would you be able to introduce yourself to the audience again, having done this once before, and say a bit about yourself and your background? And
yeah, so thanks for having me back, because I really enjoyed the last one, which was quite a few years ago, talk about hybrid working. And actually, interestingly, without doing too much of a digression, it was the work on hybrid working that really brought proactivity to the fore for me, that wanted me to explore it a little bit more. So this is quite nice.
We've got circular, bookending. How wonderful,
But for those who maybe didn't listen to that episode, my name's Joe Gray, doctor in occupational psychology.
Very fancy.
Or I know, getting used to that. Prior to what I'm doing now, I had almost 20 years in industry, working in sales and marketing, various different organizations. And these days, I am mainly working in leadership development, and I'm a part of the teaching team at Birkbeck University in London, and various other little fingers in pies. But yes, trying to do lots of things where I can learn loads and bring my insights.
Super cool. And bits of consulting and training and development. And as I mentioned, you do a bit of work with us, which is always a pleasure. We're going to be chatting today about proactivity. And it's funny, when you mentioned the remote stuff we did, I remembered. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember proactivity being one of the things that we looked for in there. How cool that that sort of led to this detailed focus. Why don't we start just with a question like, what is proactivity? What types of things might be proactive in the workplace? What is it we're speaking about when we say proactive behavior?
Yeah, it's good to give a definition, because actually sometimes people think being proactive means putting your hand up and volunteering for stuff. And actually, whilst that is really helpful in organizations, it's not necessarily proactivity. So proactive behavior really is about being that one step ahead. So it's taking action off your own back, kind of making things happen rather than waiting for things to happen. So it's that idea of being very sort of self-initiated, change-oriented, kind of future-focused behavior. And it's a bit like, mainly driven by, I don't really like the status quo, therefore I need to change it. So I'm going to be proactive. So that's what it's, you know, those three things about being self-initiated, future-focused, change-oriented, those are the key. As I said, sometimes I was hearing people describing proactivity by saying, oh yeah, I put my hand up when I get asked. Well, actually, that's been a great citizen at work, but it's not necessarily being proactive.
Yeah, interesting. There's an invitation there to participate when put your hand up, right? Somebody's asked you a question. Whereas proactivity, from what you said, with that self-initiated activity, you're finding something and just leaning into it yourself.
Yeah, which is why it doesn't always go down so well. So there's a good side and a bad side.
Interesting.
And we'll get into some of that today.
We'll delve into it a bit. I know it's like such a big subject, but there's loads of stuff in there. So that's what it is. It's got those three points that you raised there. Why do we care? I mean, we're talking about it, all right? I guess going to this, there's a sort of assumption in my mind that proactivity is a good thing, right? Like we're going into this conversation about framing, and you said maybe there's like pros and cons and stuff like that. But why should we care? What impact does it have on us as an individual if we are proactive, and impact does it have on those around us?
Yeah, I think just let me rewind slightly as well. Let me just in terms of what some of the behaviors might look like.
Useful.
So just in terms of, so the kinds of proactivity, and they can be at a kind of individual level. They can be at a trying to change it, you know, change things within the organization or team or whatever. So the types of things that I would describe, or we would describe, as proactive. So that might be asking for feedback so that you can improve performance so that you can enhance your career opportunities. It might be voicing some concerns. It might be voicing concerns around safety procedures in the organization. It might be voicing concerns around if you see some unfairness or inequity and raising that because you believe that's important that the organization addresses it. It might be that you see a process that's really ineffective and that needs fixing. So I'm going to go and make that more effective. That's the kinds of behaviors. So your question then of why do we care? Well, we can now start to see as your organizations, in a world of work that is dynamic and changing and constantly, you know, striving for competitive advantage, actually we need that innovative behavior. We need that kind of eye on what we should be doing next. We need people to be self-directed rather than waiting for things to be asked. So from a helping organizations future-proof, perform well, actually, there's a direct link with those types of proactive behaviors. Interestingly, if you want a little geeky fact, I did a little search of all Indeed job postings very recently, cool. And I put all down different terms that would be described as proactive behaviors. And 40% of all job postings claimed that they were seeking a characteristic that you would just define as proactive behavior. So it's a sort of the characteristic.
Yeah, and that's a great geeky fact. I love a percentage and a geeky fact. That brings it all to life. That's pretty cool. As you were speaking, I was thinking a few different things there about this topic and some of the impacts and benefits and things like that. And one of the things that came to my mind is that if a decision-making process has to go from somebody on the front line, if you will, up into an organization through another decision-making process and back down, we get all kinds of losses in there. We get losses of fidelity of data and insight. We get losses of time. We get all this kind of stuff. So presumably, if you're running in an organization that doesn't have proactive behavior, you've got time delays and sort of quality and data insight delays in terms of what you're doing. So presumably, it makes sense for somebody, a frontline on the call face, whatever language we want to use to like fix it, because it'll be a better outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is that idea of being responsive rather than reactive. We're responding because actually we're seeing something's happening and we do something about it before it becomes a problem. So it's that responsive behavior, preempting that future-oriented piece. Another geeky fact I thought was interesting. I was looking at the World Economic Forum have put out a future skills, what the future world of work, and this one's for 2025 and beyond. What kind of skills are going to be really important for workers, for the workforce? Critical thinking, agility, curiosity, a learning mindset, a learning orientation. Those came up just as a few of the kind of top skills. And for me, guess what? They all go hand in hand with proactive behavior. Yeah. So I think in terms of our competitive advantage as human beings over machines, actually, these are some of the, so kind of that makes sense why actually these are characteristics organizations are looking for, because actually they're useful skills.
Yeah. And back to that, some of the things you mentioned earlier about the sort of agility of the organizations we're in the changing world, we kind of got to do this to move quickly. Geeky fact number two, I kind of wish I had like a special sound effect button for geeky fact.
That would
be fun,
wouldn't
it? Yeah, we'll build one of those. Okay, we could do it proactively. We spot a problem and fix it. There we go. Yes. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about this. What was it that drew you to study it? Like, I mean, you've clearly sort of drawn into it. You've sort of explored it. Like, where are you sort of geeking out about productivity?
No, I really am. Oh, no. I guess one thing I'd just also highlight, just at the why should we care about it? At an individual level, I mean, you can probably think of a time when you have successfully been proactive. Actually, it makes us also feel really good.
Bring
about change and we make something happen and we achieve something. So there is also lots of, it creates positive emotion amongst us. It creates that sense of pride and achievement and all that kind of thing. So when it goes well, it can work really well. Now we can start then thinking about the dark side. So being aware of my own proactive personality, and it is absolutely innate. And I have recognized that actually, that's led to some really positive outcomes, but I am also really mindfully aware sometimes hasn't. And so that was kind of like interest. I mean, like most doctoral students, they do a topic that's really interesting for themselves because it's a bit of a self-discovery and self-exploration.
Yeah, healer, heal thyself or whatever, right?
Exactly. So there's a little bit of that. But so there was my own personal interest and my own kind of, my own journey of self-discovery. But I was really interested in this kind of double-edged perspective on it, knowing that it can be really beneficial, but actually there are pitfalls if it's overplayed or not as wise as it could be. So that was the bit that I was interested in, the kind of multifaceted exploration of it. That's the bit that I was really driven to want to find out more about.
Yeah, it's kind of nuanced, isn't it? I guess if you're making decisions and implementing things, it's great if you do it right and in a good way. But if you've misinterpreted or have a misunderstanding or do it in a way that is somehow detrimental to others or those around you, there are all these risks around it. I guess it's a hard line to blend. You've focused on a few things, but one of the things you've done with your research is you've delved in and focused a little bit on older workers. Why was that? What led you to them?
So again, without sounding all self-interested and overly self-indulgent.
me.
It's all about me. But I soon will be categorized as older worker. I'm on my last year before I enter that category, if you will, but I mean, it's a bit of nonsense on. It really struck me. So as being aware of age myself, I had to plow through hundreds of studies that have explored proactivity at work. And when you're looking through papers, you look at the participants and, you know, their age and things. And I was like, hang on a minute. There's a lot of participants actually early to mid-career. What about older workers in all of this? And in fact, my systematic literature review was 25 studies, and it was that across all studies was like 20,000 plus research participants. And, you know, the average age was something like, you know, 34. So I kind of felt like there was a gap in knowledge for a start. So, and what I was curious to was to sort of see, well, are some of the findings, are they relevant to older workers, knowing that as we age, experiences change us, we are, you know, we develop as people, and therefore that might have a play something. And I also, as a bit of an activist, I get really annoyed when I hear this kind of rhetoric around older workers being really change resistant. I hate resistance anyway as a whole frame, but anyway, that's a difference. We'll come back for a different talk on that. But this idea of older workers, you know, not being proactive, just waiting out for retirement, I just thought, I don't think that's true. So whilst my study couldn't prove that because it's a qualitative study, but I just wanted to get a sense of what were people's experiences of being proactive as an older worker, and just hearing their stories of proactive experiences, good and bad, how it made them feel, what were the outcomes, what even motivated them to do it in the first place. So that's really what I was interested in, was hearing the stories of older workers who I believe have not been heard as much as they should be.
Yeah, nice. And I know this isn't maybe really the time for it, but do you get a sense that proactivity changes over our lifetimes, just incidentally? I mean, like, could you map what you've done for older workers to like even older or very junior workers? Any sense on that?
As a professional scientist, because of the nature of my study, I can't make generalizations about changes because it wasn't the nature of the study. But I would love for other researchers to be able to do something on a more longitudinal basis, to do something that involved a mass survey. But certainly, based on the stories that I was hearing, proactivity really relies on confidence, on self-efficacy, knowing, being confident in our abilities to do things, and draws on experience. And so the logic there is, well, if I'm more experienced and I've learned the hard way, therefore, technically, I should be more confident in being proactive. What I kind of found was, is that certainly the individuals I was speaking to, they were talking about they are more proactive in areas that are important and interesting to them. They're not going to start being proactive on something that they can see is just going to go badly, or they're genuinely not that interested in. So one of the interesting lifespan development psychological theories is that actually as we get older, we do seek more intrinsically motivating activities in our lives. So we want to do more things that we know means it's important to us. So I definitely got a sense of that. There was some perhaps more consideration about what I'm being proactive in and what I'm not. So there was probably a little bit more intention around it.
Oh, that's cool. And thank you for sharing that. And I know I kind of like asked you to speculate on something a bit there, which is fun to do. All right. So that's helpful. When we think about individuals being or engaging in proactivity in the workplace, you talked about being drawn to things that are sort of intrinsically motivating and so on and things like that. What are some of the reasons that people give when you explored with them their proactive behaviors? What are some of the factors that might lead somebody to be proactive?
So I'm going to focus specifically on my insights today of older workers. I guess, first off, it is important to highlight the distinction between proactive personality and proactive behavior as a almost learned behavior, because it is valued in work. It can become a bit of a learned behavior. People are developing it because they know it's valued and it's almost positive reinforcement.
Yeah.
You know, so those who are identifying as having a proactive personality, and there is a whole questionnaire that you can complete that can determine if you're on the PPS scale.
Yes.
So for those who it is, as I said, for me, it is an innate behavior. Sometimes I have to have a word with myself to go, why are you even doing this? Just stop. Because just that drive, because I just feel like I need to do that. And sometimes, you know, as I said, it's now having done this, I'm now probably being enacting a little bit more wise proactivity. But yeah, so that is important to make that distinction, I guess, because sometimes even for those who've just got a really proactive personality, sometimes, you know, they probably might not even realize what the reason to, it's just they can't help themselves.
This would be a fantastic alternative conversation, right? Like, what is it in that moment that we want to address by taking proactive behavior?
Yeah. So,
yeah, cool.
So there's that. But I guess going back to kind of, well, and amongst my participants, there was a mix of some people who absolutely said that they identified as proactive personality, others who said it was more of a learned behavior. And those with a learned behavior, it was something they'd felt had grown over time because of the confidence. So in terms of what's driving that, motives, so our motivation, what motivates us. So achievement motive comes through very strongly. And that came through actually amongst all of my participants, that idea of a sense of achievement from fulfilling, bringing about something and seeing it's making a difference and seeing people have appreciated it. So again, that goes back to that, the pride that comes with achieving. So that's definitely something that came through. And then I've already mentioned the intrinsic motivation, and again, linked, I think, seemed to link with age and lifespan around, because that's important to me. It's really important to me. Or so, for example, one participant is very motivated by climate action. So actually projects at work that were climate action related, that's what she really wanted to be proactive in, because that's for her, that's important. And then it starts then almost linking into values, what is important to you. So I started to then pick up on some values driven motive. So for some, that's self-direction, just, you know, not be told what to do. For others, that's creativity. So some people really valued the creative process in even ideating change. That piece was really motivating. For others, I was getting their fairness barometer was on high alert, and it was about they were motivated because they want to create more equality and inclusion. So that's, it's kind of values and motives that are kind of intertwined. The achievement motive was kind of coming through across everybody. Sort of those values driven was kind of more clustered.
Yeah. Like, people are fascinating, aren't they? Like, how amazing is the diversity and range of drivers of action that we have? I think it's, it's really, really cool. So we've talked a little bit about proactivity and what it is and why it matters and your interest in studying it and some of the factors that influence people to be proactive and some of the ways it shows up. If we like sort of step back a little bit, like, how do you go about studying this? How do you even start trying to unpick this and study it from a research perspective? What kind of things do you do?
Well, you obviously can't see, your audience can't see, you can,
because I can,
we're
see,
looking, but you can see my big thick textbook.
I was going to mention it earlier. Yeah. Proactivity at work.
Proactivity at work has been my absolute Bible, almost 600-page textbook. That was great starting point. I mean, this area of study is not new. This has really started bubbling away in the kind of late 90s. And has really come into its own in the last kind of two decades. But certainly this is something that's been of interest to researchers for 30, 40 years. So it's a pretty established body of research, which sometimes is great because there's lots out there, but obviously there's a lot to
just get your head around.
But yeah, so I kind of started off textbook, and then you then go down rabbit holes for the like next couple of years. It's a massive rabbit hole. And so I've been really thoroughly basking in that rabbit hole. I can't even imagine how many hundreds of studies around proactivity at work. And actually the thing is, I still don't get bored of it. So yes, so it's a lot of reading, a lot of academic papers, studies, and then trying to synthesize that and trying to make sense of it all. There's quite a few studies that are systematic reviews or meta-analysis. So they've done some of that hard work already. So that helps, because it is an established body of literature. There's some good reviews out there that take away some of that kind of having to synthesize it all yourself.
Yeah, great. Well, it's cool to have something that's built on. And you said you did a qualitative type approach to your actual research.
Yes. So, and again, this was on a round of what was sort of driving me to do the study that I did. Organizational psychology and the literature, that's where the literature bases management and kind of organizational psychology. A lot of the studies are quantitative surveys, which can really insightful, some really rich data amongst those. But actually there is a distinct lack of qualitative research. And so I was really keen to have conversations. I really wanted to understand people's experiences, because obviously the drawback of a survey, even with the most sophisticated kind of multifactorial studies, because different people, different experiences and the context and all this interplays, you don't get all of that. And that's the bit that I really wanted to really get to the heart of. How do, you know, good experiences, bad experience, what does that lead to? And really try and understand more about individuals' experiences.
Yeah, that richness of the individual context and individual background is cool. I think qualitative work brings a great depth. Cool. Okay, so we've talked about it. We've explored what it is. We've thought about the sort of demographic we're looking at. We've talked about some factors. Can we change it? Like, you've said yourself that you are a born proactive individual, right? And we didn't sort of unpick what that looked like. But is this just something that you're born with? Is it nature? Is it nurture?
No. It can be both. It can be both. So there's a proactive personality measure and scales, and there are characteristics that are more personality driven, but it absolutely is a behavior that can be taught and learnt. But interestingly, even not developing it, but also stifling it, because actually going back to that importance of the situation and the context, you know, even the most proactive person in the world in an environment that doesn't value proactivity will not be proactive. They will be stifled, and chances are they will leave, because guess what? They're proactive.
Yeah, it's rubbish, right? Yeah.
But in the moment, if the environment is not conducive to someone making suggestions or speaking up, then they will be silenced. But they just won't be silenced for too long, because they will leave. That's
proactively.
Yeah, that for me was a really interesting insight, that those who did identify as having a proactive personality and the number of them who record stories, other parts of their career where they had gone into organizations and been told, we're going through transformation, please come in, you're really going to make a difference here. And they came in and they used words like, I came in and I felt handcuffed, I felt silenced, I felt like I was speaking on deaf ears, all those kind of things. That actually that becomes hugely demotivational for someone who likes to bring about change. So actually your question was, can it change? Yes. And in both directions.
Yeah. And it seems like it can change in both directions, maybe in two ways. So that external context changes it, but presumably there are internal factors that change it as well. You said potentially over time as we age, stuff changes, but, you know, no sort of guarantee on that. But presumably there are things that we can do as individuals if we learn, if we practice, if we proactively, unfortunately, like, where does it start, right? We need to maybe do some of these things ourselves, but we presumably can make some changes ourselves to be more proactive, given a stable context.
Yeah. And I think for me, a lot is about the context and the environment, because I believe that you need to get the environment right in order for people to be able to then develop and build the skills in an environment that's conducive to it. I'm a big believer of fix the environment before you start fixing the people. And I think in this case, you know, if you create the environment and you encourage, it's like, again, I've already kind of mentioned that idea of positive reinforcement, but if you're creating a psychologically safe environment where you're asking people for, you value their input, you value their opinions, you want things to be different, and they're the best people to tell you about it, they're more likely to do that. I think the environment bit, and I'm not going to give too much away on that, because, you know, I'm obviously writing a book on that very topic.
Yeah.
So I'll come back next year and we'll divulge in that.
Yeah.
But I think in answer to your question, yeah, the environment can influence it. Other people can influence it. So I came up with the phrase stifled proactivity. So when someone else stops you in your tracks, in most cases, that seems to be someone more senior, but you've got a proactive endeavor. I'm taking charge of a project to do things differently around here. Guess what? I need to get people on the bus. And if they don't want to get on the bus, they can make life quite difficult. And that can be in itself really demotivating, de-energizing, a struggle. So that can, in the end, sometimes make you think, oh, I can't be bothered. So it's a very social phenomenon. Which it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's an individual behavior.
Yeah, operating
in a very social context.
Yeah, I was wondering about that earlier. I was wondering, people on their own, like if you're in the woods on your own, where does your proactivity balance come from and things like that? But I think that's not something for now. Also, as you were speaking, and again, not for now, I was reflecting a little bit on that sort of cultural aspect, the broader cultural aspect. You occasionally read things that are, I don't know about the validity of them, but things talking about sort of the ability to innovate and social behavior in different countries, reflecting things like their political structures and national cultures. And I would hypothesize that there's maybe something in that national level that would influence some aspects of this. And back to your point about rewards, right? But what behaviors feel good, right? Does it feel good to be proactive? Does it not? That's really, really interesting. And of course, all that leads to things like innovation and improvement and change and creativity.
I mean, that's interesting if you think about power distance as a kind of cultural factor. Obviously, proactivity does involve that power has been dispersed. Yeah. So in an organization where the power distance is more evident and hierarchy is more valued and respected, then yes, actually, I would say the likelihood is some proactive behaviors are going to be dumbed down because, again, we're creatures of reward and
safety,
aren't we?
Consequence. And when you were actually speaking earlier a little bit about some of the potential reasons why some older workers might have higher levels of potential proactivity, one of the things that came to my mind was that it's not only that they've got potentially the knowledge and skills on which to feel confident to take a proactive behavior. Quite often, my sense is that as some people get older, they develop some of the skills or broader resources around them to let them more easily withhold potential consequences of breaching some of those power gaps, right? That sort of power dynamic can dissipate in relationships in the workplace as people get older because they've got more background to them, more self-assurance potentially, more financial resources, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So it can be something in that sort of lack of consequence of taking what is potentially a risk-taking behavior in terms of doing something proactive.
So
I was like, it's risky, but whatever, I can take the consequences, right?
Yeah. And funny enough, that again, that is just reminding me that came up. So financial security, and again, it's not going to be the same for everybody. This was a certain group of individuals, but having financial security, less financial security concerns, actually, that was mentioned a few times. It's kind of like, what have I got to lose? If it's something that's important,
I got the FU money, right? That's what people say.
Yeah. So I absolutely did pick up on some of that around kind of going, well, what have I got to lose? That is almost that kind of a bit more of that carefreeness linked to not necessarily needing the financial security quite as much. I think there is also, I mean, as we age, we do become more adept at emotionally regulating and self-regulation. So also we don't necessarily get quite as worked up about things that may have bothered us so much in our younger years. So there's a bit of that plays in. So yeah, and there's definitely, people are learning from experiences. So they're kind of like, there's another really interesting theory without getting into the depths of it. It's around the fact that as we age, we have a desire to want to have more positive experiences that give us positive emotions.
Lovely, yeah.
So it's called socio-emotional selectivity theory.
We need that little geek out bell again.
Yeah, I know, we should have brought it. But it's interesting because the idea is you want to lean into more experiences that you know are going to make you feel good. So actually, I'm potentially then recognizing, you know what, I've done that in the past and it wasn't that great. So I'm not even going to get into that because I don't want to experience that discomfort, that emotion. So again, that gets into this more being a little bit more intentional. So one of my participants talked about their cognitive filter and talked about the fact that, you know, there's something going on that they want to be proactive in, but actually they know it's just too going to be too annoying and stressful. So guess what? I can't be bothered. It's not worth the energy. It's almost that there was that question again that came up about it's not worth my energy. And again, because of the regulatory self-regulation and the emotional regulation skills that have been developed over time, it's almost like, I'm not going to get myself bothered about that. What I am going to do is put my energy into that thing over there that does really bother me and is really important to me.
Yeah.
So I think there's something quite empowering in that. You know, I like that.
And all of that speaks to a fair amount of self-awareness, right?
Yeah.
That understanding what you do care about, what you don't care about, what you can be bothered for, what's worth fighting for, what won't really fill your cup, what's going to drain you.
Yeah.
These are all things that I wish I had more of as a younger person, right? Like, wouldn't it be great to have that as a young person? Knowing how to, I like that reference there to like worth the effort, right? Worth the energy. We've only got so much energy, right? Mm. How do we know when to spend it in the right way? It's like such a limited resource.
But then in a way, it's kind of like, we wouldn't have that wisdom in our older years if we hadn't had that experience. So I kind of almost feel like that's the rite of passage. We have to be able to learn from.
It's a price you pay. Yeah. You've got to try all these things to know the answer, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess it's that sort of influence and control and figuring out where to have that balance as well.
Yeah.
And accepting the things you can't change and all of that, which is cool. In your research, I know we can't cover everything you've done and we'll probably chat about it again. And we are going to do a seminar on this as well. So a sort of online seminar at some point. But something I'd like to touch on today is that you identified some distinct sort of clusters or typologies that describe how individuals understand their motivation for being proactive at work. And I guess some of those drivers around them, and you've come up with some names for those clusters of people. Would you be able to delve into that a little bit and share what you've come up with?
So I'm just going to put a little health warning in that I don't like putting people in boxes. So this, I'm coming up with clusters, but I don't like putting people in boxes, but also I have a very ordered mind and I kind of like seeing patterns, and there was patterns here. So that's just my little, and actually even within this of clusters, I can actually see how the context could actually make people potentially behave differently anyway. So, but I think one of the things I found really fascinating. So in my research, I actually conducted two interviews with each participant, which was super helpful because one, it meant I had really rich data, but there's a great, that in-between part, which was about 4 weeks, was great for the participant to like really try and make some sense. And suddenly other things that they thought of that they wish they'd told me, they were able to tell me. So I was able to get a second bite of the cherry, speak to them twice. And that was great for me because I was able to do a whole load of sense making and start going, oh, that's interesting. Let me ask them about this when I speak to them next time. So that for me was really helpful. The thing that came up on the first interviews that I found fascinating was what I call the language of combat and gameplay. So heads getting shot off, heads above parapets, getting your head blown off, all sort of kind of warfare. But then the gameplay, people were talking about poker playing and waiting for the back, going in the back door. And there was some real sort of gameplay going on. So this kind of, that for me, I found quite fascinating. And I kind of then almost came up with this idea, you know, this thing we're calling proactivity, it's a bit like, playing the proactivity game. One of my backgrounds had been in the toy industry, so I found this particularly interesting. I thought, if proactivity is like a game, what would it be? And that was one of the questions I asked in the second interviews. And that was really interesting because
really
then I started to get that metaphor. Interestingly, the difference between someone playing Monopoly or chess versus someone playing a game of Rounders. Very different forms of gameplay. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting itself. So I kind of talked around gameplay. So I coined 4 cluster types based on how we play games. So the names are strategist, sandboxer, tacticians, and cooperators. And so I'll just quickly, I'm not going to go into massive depth. So the strategist really values independence, being in control, feeling empowered. Their proactive endeavors are really motivated by achievement and challenge. They talked about being competitive and enjoying a challenge. So there, if again, as the metaphor, I think Monopoly came up a couple of times for those type of individuals. So these individuals really talked about doing the groundwork, influencing tactics, really quite considered in their approach because they want to have a proactive endeavor that has a successful outcome. So that was the strategist. And then sandbox game. I don't know. Sandbox games are like the ones where you kind of go in the blank screen. It's a bit like Minecraft. You kind of make your own thing. So sandbox game, the sandboxer is bringing the metaphor of creativity and innovation. But that, again, with that self-directedness, that desire for freedom and independence. And the sandboxers describe themselves as being different thinkers, different, you know, they talk about being perceived as being different, thinking differently, also motivated by achievement, but it's about innovation and ideas and that kind of thing. So they're a really interesting cluster. Well, they're all interesting clusters. Then the tacticians, if you think about a tactical game, that's where it's about everyday moves. You do this, I'll do that. You do this, I'll do that. So it's a little bit more opportunistic, if you will. And the participants that I kind of saw kind of demonstrating some of these kind of behaviors tended to describe themselves as proactive behavior being a learned behavior, not an innate personality trait. Many of these participants also really felt they valued like customs within the organization. So that kind of valuing tradition and conformity, doing what was expected of them, doing the right thing, whatever that right thing is. So their proactivity was very much associated with doing the right thing for the organization. And it was within their job remit. Therefore, it's the right thing to do. So that was the tacticians. And then cooperative games is about obviously working collaboratively, cooperatively. And in this context, the cooperators very much valued that kind of sense of belonging, need for others, that is very others oriented, talked a lot about fairness, equality, inclusion, that kind of piece, doing work that's really aligned to those values, being very values driven. This group also talked quite a bit about the younger generation. I found that quite interesting. That is also linked to age and lifespan when we start giving a damn about the next, our legacy and and who's what we want to leave. So that came through amongst those. So that was four groups. What was quite interesting is after I did this, there's a significant piece of research that looks at values orientations at work. So Schwartz is one of the original pioneers in values at work. And actually more recently, there was some work that really brought that to looking at it in quadrants. And those quadrants actually marry to four. So that felt quite validating. They tend to fit within those four quadrants.
Yeah,
so,
lovely. Which one?
There you go.
Who are you?
So I tell you what, if you'd asked me this 10 years ago, I would have absolutely told you I was a strategist. I believe over the last 10 years, and probably because I'm working in consulting and I rely on collaborating and cooperating, I probably think that's probably where I would put myself. But if you put me tomorrow in a really high-pressured, competitive, commercial environment, I could quite easily fall to the strategist. And I think that's the point, is that you can adapt depending on the context. What I certainly wouldn't be very good at is somewhere where you're not allowed to be proactive.
Yeah.
What about you? I'm interested.
Well,
did any of those resonate for you?
Well, yeah, you know, they did. Like, bits of all of them resonated with me a little bit, but in reality, I'm cooperative space as well. That's just where I am. I can connect with that pretty clearly when I see it. And if you put me in like one of those highly competitive worlds again, I'd probably say, I'm going to really proactively get out of this because this is not the game that I want to play, right? Yeah. Like, this is a different end state. And I love that idea of game, or your use of game language. And it's almost sort of game theory for life. What are our factors that influence us when we are proactive? What are the values that drive my decision nodes from a game theory perspective? What are the things that motivate me? And I think this is almost a reflection of, what is the game that I'm trying to play? What is the game that I'm trying to win?
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to win some of the games that are described in strategist and tactician, but I am trying to win the cooperative game. And I'm doing a little bit of sandboxer game plan as well, because I like that sort of creativity and space, and, you know, feel in control of myself and what I do.
I think the interesting thing with the sandboxer, and I mean, I'm only talking, there was only three people within my participant group of 14 that kind of, I could see some of the relevance to some of that. Interestingly, those who were all working in environments where they did feel a little bit handcuffed. So again, I wonder how a sandbox in a different context. So this is the bit that, I mean, I've come up with these clusters. I can see how they fit. There's some parallels with the Schwartz's work-related values. But I guess it's the difference. If you took that person and put them somewhere else, what would that do? Where do they thrive? Because actually, there is a sandbox or in a different environment, more of a cooperative. They've got everybody cooperating. So I guess that comes back to the environment.
And with that sort of layer, like, if a sandboxer acts as a cooperator in a different environment, is that them effortfully doing that? Is that them bending out of shape? Does that deplete them? Are they, you know, going to head towards burnout as a result of whatever that self-regulation is to be that other thing? Or will they really fit in and be it? I think it's really interesting. And I guess, do you think different organizations design, without knowing it, spaces that would be better for these different clusters?
I guess the bit that I'm still not entirely sure is the strategies, so it's survival of the fittest, so therefore they're operating like that because of the context. But again, if they went to a more power dispersed environment that was really supportive, that actually they would be cooperators. So I think, again, it goes back to the environment and the context, I think, does have huge influence on how someone enacts their proactivity. But then that said, these are also people who talk about enjoying competition, enjoying being competitive. So therefore, in an environment that is a little bit less competition and more cooperative, maybe they wouldn't enjoy that so much. So
I saw somebody, I was traveling just the other day, and I saw somebody with a t-shirt on, and it had like a computer game thing, and just said, it's a co-op game, right? And I was like, that's kind of fun. That's like, it feels like a bit of a life motto there, right? Yeah. Like, and I used to play computer games, and I remember I didn't really like playing head-to-head computer games because somebody has to win and somebody has to lose.
Yeah.
And that seems a bit rubbish.
Yeah.
So why don't we do the cooperative and then everybody wins? So,
I think there's definitely, you know, we talked earlier about, you mentioned about the self-awareness piece. I think having the self-awareness around what your preference is, and then knowing, therefore, is that environment, does that environment feel like it's going to be conducive to what I need? I think, obviously, as I said, I used the example of lots of people who were really proactive, who ended up in environments who said they wanted that, but they didn't. I think having that transparency, that individual has the self-awareness and the organization are very transparent. Just saying we want proactive people, I think, in what way? Because what kind of proactivity do you really value? What proactive?
That's a lovely layer to bring in.
Yeah, it is rewarded in this organization. And just tell people what it is rather than saying we want self-starters, all this kind of thing. And then,
what does that even mean? Yeah. Like self-starting in which direction? Thank you very much. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. I've enjoyed that little chat there. So we've got those four things here. And I guess we've started to talk about where I was going to go next, which is if we know this stuff, how does it help us? If we have this self-awareness about our own sort of proactivity and maybe some of the reasons behind it. I mean, you called out there the different factors around sort of our values and our motivations. How does it help us to know this stuff? Like, what good does it do us?
I think from a fit perspective, as I just mentioned, I think if you can get a sense of that, actually the way I operate and this in the way what the organization values, if there's a good fit, I think there's something in that. I think from an organizational perspective, I think it really, given what I've said about, let's stop obsessing with fixing people. Let's get the environment sorted and let's think, what are the things that we can do to, as I said, entice these types of behaviors? Then there's lots we can do. So I think there's a lot that leaders can learn, HR professionals, I think there's a lot to aware of that can actually make quite a difference to, as I said, some of the environmental factors. Yeah, I think ultimately, if it's something organizations are asking for more of, they need to be aware of the downsides, the pitfalls, and they need to be aware of what can we do, what kind of interventions can we introduce, allow it to flourish. Because ultimately, that's what we want. You want positive, proactive endeavors. You want people to be able to come and making a difference without, like you say, one of the more and more studies are highlighting the depletive effects lead to stress, potentially burnout, because of the energy that being proactive takes. So actually, keep asking people to be proactive without the right environment, actually, we could just be handing them a one-way ticket to burnout. So I think there's a well-being considerations that are important to note in all of this as well, just to pluck a few things out of the air.
Yeah, no, that's great. A wide range. And like reflection on well-being, the piece around burnout, the piece around sort of shaping the expectations, which I guess improves your organizational performance as well if you do it in the right way. Presumably improves, employee retention and career pathways and all that.
Yeah, I mean, the positive outcomes when it goes well is linked to career success, job satisfaction, high levels of performance. They are some positive, really positive outcomes for the organization. Retention, like you say. So there's some good reasons to get this right.
A bit of a side question. I was just thinking, if somebody finds themselves in a role where they maybe can't be proactive, but got a bit of a proactive, is this one of those things where you could be proactive outside of work and that would help you get some of those benefits, do you think? You'd get a little bit of agency, control and influence maybe in that spare space. Does it spread like throughout your whole life or is it, do you need to have it in work as well?
I think that is a really good question and one that I would need to ponder on more. It's part of my own kind of self-talk in the past. If I've been going through something that's particularly difficult at work, go, okay, it's fine. Put less emphasis on that and dial up your personal life.
Kind of charity or whatever it is.
I've kind of done that myself. Stuff, yeah. But I haven't come across any studies that speak to that idea of, can you dumb down your desire to want to be proactive in one place, but get it somewhere else, get your fix somewhere else? It's a great question, but not one I can answer, I'm afraid.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I was just speculating. So I think we're getting towards the end of today. What's next for you? Like you alluded to having lots of other stuff going on in the proactivity space. Like, are you focusing on new things? Where are you headed? Have you got any teasers of what's going on?
Yes. So I am actually now almost halfway through authoring my first book. Yes. I've been very proactive in getting down to it, but I think that progress might slow a little bit because I've got some other work commitments that are going to start dialing up. So yes, I'm authoring my first book, which is to help leaders and organizations create the right conditions for proactive behavior to flourish. So that hopefully will be hitting the shelves next summer, if not sooner. So I'm really excited about that. And yeah, that's kind of all consuming. I'm doing some other projects that now that this is becoming my kind of be all and end all, it's interesting the number of organizations that want to talk about how can we do this? How can we do this? That's linked to competitive advantage and innovation and the innovation piece. So I think I could imagine that I will do more work that is around how do we create more innovative, proactive behavior. That'd be something that I would find very motivating.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's very exciting, isn't it?
Yeah. You
know, roll on, summer 2025.
Yeah, and I've got my graduation coming up, so that's exciting. But yeah, I mean, it's been an amazing journey and one that is continuing. So, and to think that we were talking about productivity and hybrid work, however many, 4 years
ago. Whatever, it was like 2020, something like that. Yeah, a long time ago. Yeah. Amazing. All right. Well, brilliant. Thank you very much for joining us and for sharing your thoughts. And I'm sure we'll speak again soon. In the meantime, can people connect on LinkedIn or get in touch or anything like that?
Yes, absolutely. On LinkedIn, Joe Gray, I think it's / The Progress Lab. Happy to connect with anyone, certainly, because I'll be definitely sharing more insights on LinkedIn. And obviously, when my book comes out, I'll be posting all about that. So yes, definitely.
I spy a book tour coming up.
Exactly. That'd be exciting. Awesome.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Joe. It's been an absolute pleasure and we'll do it again soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Don't forget, as well as these podcasts, we deliver at least one free online seminar every month that everyone can attend. You can sign up for these and our newsletter, The Wow Mail, on our website, www.worldofwork.io. That's www.worldofwork.io.